Hi friends, happy Friends of France Tuesday. Welcome to the third episode of our four-part series for the fourth season on one of my favorite topics, skincare and beauty. In the first episode, we tackled Hanbang, or traditional Korean medicine, and its preventative philosophies that influence the global phenomenon of K-beauty. In the second episode, we delved deeper into K-beauty with the hot trend of PDRN, or salmon sperm DNA in skincare. Yes, you heard that right. And in this third episode, we remain within the domains of skincare and beauty. We take a trip outside the eastern part of the world and back into our western world, with conversations about global trends on social media. I feel like each time I open TikTok, there is a new skincare trend that I'm sure sends dermatologists and cosmetic scientists to their graves. In this episode, we tackle trends within the skincare and beauty world, like clean beauty, organic and botanical ingredients and products, NAD plus IV therapy for combating cellular aging, but also, quiz, NAD plus Krebs cycle, anyone? PTSD. Gua sha and facial rollers, rosemary oil for hair loss, and the tale as old as time, toothpaste for pimple breakouts. Has anybody tried any of these trends recently? Yep, I'm raising both of my arms. But do these trends have any actual bearing and benefits? We'll find out today with our very special guest, Dr. Connie Yang, a board-certified dermatologist and clinical assistant professor of medicine based in New York City. Dr. Yang received her MD from Boston University School of Medicine, spent a dedicated research year focused on pigmentary disorders at Massachusetts General Hospital, Harvard Medical School Department of Dermatology, and completed her dermatology residency at Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai, where she served as chief resident of cosmetics in her final year. Currently, Dr. Yang serves as a physician at P. Frank MD, by Dr. Paul Jared Frank, and an assistant clinical professor at the Icahn School of Medicine, Department of Dermatology. Dr. Yang is a media clinical expert, having been featured in Vogue, Elle, Cosmopolitan, PopSugar, The New York Post, Allure, NBC News, and so much more. I mean, I must say, not only she should be a medical expert on Vogue, but she needs to be a Vogue model herself. Okay, are you ready to get into these trends and find out if they are actual clean beauty and free of guilt and blame? Let's get to it. What if your home could feel more like you? Meet Emmy, a New York-based home fragrance brand founded in 2020 by Erica and Mark. Inspired by the scents they grew up with, like steamed rice, tropical fruits, and temple incense, Emmy celebrates fragrance as memory, culture, and ritual. From design-forward candles to reed diffusers and hand soaps, each product is crafted with clean ingredients, wood wicks, and thoughtful formulations. More than scent, Emmy creates atmosphere and belonging, storytelling in wax, in water, in air. So whether it's lighting a candle or washing your hands, small rituals are transformed into something intentional, making your space warm, alive, and entirely yours. Get 15% off at emmenyc.com. That's emmenyc.com with code FRANZ. That's FRANZ. Find your story, find your atmosphere, find it with Emmy. Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of the Friends of France podcast. And today I'm so excited to introduce our next guest to talk about all things skin, which is one of my most favorite topics, board certified dermatologist. And I honestly think she could be a Vogue model, but Dr. Connie Yang, hello.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Thank you so much for joining us. Can you please introduce yourself to all of our listeners?
Yes. So I'm Dr. Connie Yang. I'm a board certified dermatologist here in New York City, and I work at a beautiful private practice called P. Frank MD. We have two offices in the West Village and on the Upper East Side, and I do a combination of medical, surgical, and cosmetic dermatology. So everything from treating acne, skin cancer, to Botox filler, and basically every laser and device you could possibly imagine.
Yeah, I love that. You know, I've had my fair share of visits to the dermatology offices and every skin offices because I've had super severe acne when I was in high school. Like, literally such dark moments of my life. And I guess this centers around a very topic, which is you're an expert of, which is the skin. But I think recently, especially in the recent years, there's one topic about the skin that I've been seeing everywhere on my For You page and all Reddit forums. It's about the skin barrier. I feel like before, I remember in high school or college, everyone was just talking about like, oh, just the skin in itself or the epidermis. But I feel like the skin barrier is another level of conversation. What is it and why is it important and how do we take care of it?
Yeah. So, I mean, you dropped a great term. It's the epidermis, which is the outermost layer of our skin. And it's our body's basically frontline system of defense that keeps the bad things out and protects us from aggressors like bacteria, allergens, irritants, things like that. It also keeps important things in. So things like moisture and nutrients. It's very important to have a healthy barrier in order for our skin to function properly.
Yeah. And I think when it comes to the skin barrier and what you're mentioning about keeping it healthy and all the nutrients, you know, there's been a lot of trends online recently that seeks to or that proposes some nutrients into our skin barrier. I think one that I've been seeing this past year is about beef tallow. And my brain is just like, what is going on? What is this all about? At first, I saw the blob of it and I was like, is this butter? What's going on? But beef tallow, this trend, what is it all about? And is it actually helpful for our skin? And if not, what are the harms surrounding it?
I mean, you're not too far off. Butter is pretty close. It is pretty much beef fat. And I really don't know where this trend came from. I agree, it kind of popped up out of nowhere. I mean, I do think there's this trend where people are trying to go for more natural kind of alternatives. And because it's from an animal, the idea that that's natural, people think it may be better, but it's not something that I would recommend for many reasons. While it can be moisturizing, it's very heavy. So it's also very comedogenic. So if you're acne prone, I would not recommend it. It's going to make you break out more. The idea is that it's high in fatty acids, and that's why it's a good moisturizer. And our skin barrier is made up of lipids, but there are so many other options out there that are much safer that can moisturize your skin very well. You don't need to render your own beef fat to make beef tallow.
Yeah, I mean, just me with my acne-prone skin, just imagining putting beef tallow on my face, I feel like I'll wake up with the zits all over my face. I mean, even sometimes the concept of like slugging, I'm just like, I'm so nervous of doing it because it's just so heavy, right?
It is. Slugging, I do think is great. But if you are prone to acne or milia, even just clogging your pores, it's something that I would be careful with. For sure.
Yeah. And you were mentioning about there's other ways and there's other things that we can do other than beef tallow. So I guess within the context of skin barrier and I guess skin barrier repair, what's your specific ingredient or even product recommendations?
So my go-to products for skin barrier repair are La Roche-Posay's Cicaplast Balm and Avène's Cicalfate. They're kind of similar. They both contain zinc oxide, which is very soothing on the skin. And you can even use diaper paste, which is the same thing. I don't know if you're familiar with face basting is another kind of trend where people use diaper paste all over their face to kind of repair their skin barrier. So those are my two go-to products.
I see. Skin pasting. You know, I always say that I have to try something at least once. So I guess that's my next step. And you were also mentioning about, I guess consumers want to do more natural approaches to their skin. And I guess we see this with the deluge of more clean beauty products, right? Quote unquote clean beauty products.
Yeah.
I feel like it's becoming marketing buzzwords too when it comes to new product launches and even new brand lines. Like, oh, it's clean. This is clean. This is natural. This is organic. This is botanical. So for you, is it true that natural or organic or botanical products or ingredients are always better for our skin? Or do you think this is just a marketing ploy?
Definitely a marketing ploy, especially that label clean beauty. That's not regulated. Any brand can, if they feel like their product falls within that category, can label it clean. But in general, natural or organic products are not necessarily better. And I always tell my patients, you know, poison ivy is natural. That does not make it good for your skin. And actually, a lot of these quote unquote natural ingredients are very common causes for contact dermatitis, like essential oils like peppermint oil, propolis, balsam of Peru, which is a fragrance that's derived from trees. Those are so commonly causes of rashes that they're included in our panels of patch testing. So natural, not always better.
There we go. I mean, I just know someone out there is using poison ivy and its derivative to cure something on their skin. Because people will just do anything just for their skin. You know, I guess it, also within the topic of natural and organic, there's also these videos that I've been seeing of people just taking slab of honey or even oatmeal and, or I guess lemon in itself. And I know I've done this myself. You know, I'm part Filipino and the Philippines, lemon is such a big thing when it comes to hyperpigmentation. People literally just squeeze that lemon or lime on their face. And I guess this goes along the lines of these videos that we've been seeing where I guess the text is, if you can't eat it, don't put it on your skin. Do you agree with this?
No, of course not. I will say the exception is oatmeal. I think oatmeal is fine, especially if you have eczema. We actually do recommend, especially for my babies with eczema, oatmeal baths. That's fine. But lemon, that's a tough one that I've seen all over TikTok too. I'm curious to hear about your experience with putting it on your skin. Yeah, the idea is that because it's an acid, it's going to exfoliate your skin, help lighten, help brighten, things like that. But lemon juice is highly acidic, so you're likely just going to irritate and damage your skin barrier and cause more problems than solve anything.
So when it came to lemon, from my experience, I think I was trying to treat my hyperpigmentation from acne, but I ended up getting more hyperpigmentation because I think my skin just got even more inflamed. I was like, it stinks. It must be working, right?
Yeah. Actually, you can, have you heard of phytophotodermatitis?
Is this the one when people are drinking alcohol in the beach or something?
Yeah. So it's actually, it's because of the lime and lemon juice, like Corona, they call it the Corona beer dermatitis. Mm-hmm. It's from the lemon juice. If you drip that on your skin and then go outside, you're going to get a sunburn and then hyperpigmentation. So another reason to not use lemon juice on your skin.
Oh my gosh. There you guys have it. And I guess all of these things, right? All of these alternatives, natural alternatives that people have been trying, sometimes it roots from this mindset of, I don't want to use anything harsh on my skin. Right. Mm-hmm. And I guess when it comes to the thought of something harsh, several people think of, I guess, what we consider active ingredients, right? Like when it comes to retinol, people will be like, oh, I'll use something like bakuchiol instead. Instead of a vitamin C serum, just, I don't know, use a lemon or an orange peel or whatnot. I guess if someone is adamant against using active ingredients, what would be your proposed alternatives then?
If they're opposed to all actives, in that case, I would just tell them to keep it very simple and just, you know, don't go overboard because it is confusing. I think that makes sense. Like thinking that lemon is going to be less harsh than a chemical exfoliant when actually lemon juice is much more acidic than a controlled exfoliant that maybe was manufactured to be put on your skin. But I understand why people may think that way. And if they really, truly want to, you know, avoid actives, again, just keeping it simple with the basics like a cleanser, moisturizer, and sun protection, supporting your skin barrier, just hydrating, and try not to irritate your skin if you're really anti-actives.
Do you get red after a sip of alcohol? Well, I do. And it actually has a name. The alcohol flush reaction. And in my case, the infamous Asian glow. But something I didn't realize is that Asian glow isn't just a cosmetic issue, it's a real health risk, linked to increased cancer risk and poor alcohol metabolism. Thankfully, Joyn is here to help, an AAPI and woman-founded supplement brand that was created to be the most effective natural solution to support people with alcohol flush and recovery, while boosting overall health. Made with clinically studied, all-natural ingredients like glutathione, milk thistle, and B vitamins, you can now finally feel confident when you drink. Get 20% off your first order at jointhefun.com. That's JOYNTHEFUN.com with the code FRANZ. That's FRANZ. Let's give the Asian glow a different meaning. What if a single cup of tea could hold a century of stories? Day Tea is a five-generation family business crafting award-winning high mountain oolong teas in Taiwan since 1918. Grown at the highest elevations, every leaf is hand-picked, all-natural, and nurtured without additives or herbicides. The result is an array of complex flavors that evolve with each steep, honored at tasting competitions in France and Japan. From premium loose leaf and tea bags, to ready-to-drink cold brew bottles, every sip is an invitation to slow down, savor, and connect. Discover tea as it's meant to be experienced. Use code FRANZ, that's F-R-A-N-Z, for 10% off at daetea.co. That's daetea.co. Valid until February 14, 2026. Brew it hot, brew it cold. Take a moment for you.
Within the line of skincare trends, beyond than just beef tallow and beyond than just, I guess, lemon on our face, I wanted to give a list of a few current skincare trends all over TikTok and Instagram. And I just want to hear your thoughts on them. And I guess the first one is in line with the active ingredient, especially with about retinol. I guess people may be hesitant of putting it on their face, right? So they're like, maybe I can just eat it instead. So I've been seeing all these videos of eat your retinol, and then someone has this whole carrot and just slugging it down their throat. So for you, do you think consuming foods high in vitamin A, which is what retinol is a derivative of, does it produce the same effect in whatever retinoids are trying to do, like skin cell turnover or other vitamin A derivatives?
So it's never a bad idea to eat a diet rich in micronutrients. You know, I'm not going to stop you from eating carrots because, you know, your nutrition and overall health is very important to having healthy skin. But actually, consuming foods high in vitamin A is not going to give you the same results as putting on a topical retinoid that's delivering that directly to your skin cells. Because when you eat these foods that are high in vitamin A, that vitamin A is going to be broken down and then it's actually stored in your liver. And then your body is distributing that through your bloodstream and your body is going to regulate how much actually reaches your skin. So eating more of vitamin A isn't going to speed up your cell turnover. And actually eating too much can actually lead to vitamin A toxicity. And you can get side effects like headache, liver damage, bone problems. The reason that topicals work better is you're actually applying it directly to where it needs to go. And actually the retinoids bind to a specific receptor in the cells that will stimulate all the good things that we want, like collagen production and cell turnover.
Curious, do you have a favorite retinoid?
So I kind of rotate. I use prescription strength retinoids, so just tretinoin. But my favorite over-the-counter one is actually the Murad retinaldehyde.
Ooh, I love that.
That one's great if you have sensitive skin and can't tolerate a prescription strength.
I see. For someone who's beginning, do you recommend starting out with retinol first versus retinaldehyde or prescription tretinoin?
Yeah, I would say if you're brand new and you have sensitive skin, and maybe start out with an over-the-counter option. And there are a lot of brands that make different strengths. So you can kind of work through different over-the-counter strengths. Like I know Medicaid makes it. SkinCeuticals, I believe, also has. So they're brands that make different strengths of over-the-counter. And then you can work your way up. And when you feel ready and you're not getting irritated, tolerating the highest strength, maybe you go see your dermatologist and get a prescription.
Yeah, I think retinol 0.01 from SkinCeuticals is my first ever retinoid, I don't know, 10 years ago. I mean, it was a great introduction to it, I must say. And then I feel like every week I'm like counting up to, I'm not seeing any peeling. I think I'm starting to get the hang of it until I was able to go into prescription retinoids. Progress. You know, aside from lemons and, you know, as an alternative to vitamin C for more brightening of dark spots or even for melasma, I don't know if this is a big thing actually here in the United States, but especially, I guess, in East Asia and Southeast Asia, papaya masks are a big thing. I know we don't have it here, but in the Philippines, there's this toner called Eskinol, and it's more for brightening, and it's always with papaya in it because apparently it's supposed to help with brightening. My first question is, what is melasma for who may not know? And would you say that natural exfoliators are helpful treatments? And if not, I guess what's your preferred and more proven ways to target melasma?
Yeah. So melasma is a very tricky and can be very frustrating condition where you get kind of blotchy patches of hyperpigmentation very commonly on the face, often on the forehead, the cheeks, and even the upper lip. There are a lot of different things that cause it. Heat, sunlight, and hormone fluctuation. So it's often called the mask of pregnancy because a lot of pregnant women develop it during pregnancy because of those hormonal fluctuations. But it can be tricky to treat, and it's almost in some ways a chronic condition because while you can lighten it, it often does kind of come back around summertime when you're exposed to those triggers again. So the key here is exfoliation. You can do that in many different types of ways with chemical exfoliants, lasers, even oral medications can be helpful too. But when it comes to kind of natural ingredients, do people use papaya, actually the fruit on their face? Is that what you mean by papaya masks?
Yeah.
Okay. So that I wouldn't recommend because, again, it's kind of like the lemon where it's not well controlled. You don't know how much exfoliation you're going to get and you can irritate the skin. I do know that there are a lot of skincare products that actually use the papaya enzymes, and that's in a bit more of a controlled setting where you can control the concentration. That's fine, but I wouldn't recommend an at-home DIY project with papaya on your face just because you're going to risk irritation, and that can actually make things worse for your melasma.
And would you say that you have a favorite, I guess, in-clinic treatment to help treat melasma or dark spots in general?
Yeah. So melasma, again, very tricky. You can't kind of just blast it with any laser because too much heat is going to flare it. So the key here is to go low and slow. And I like to do combination therapies when it comes to melasma because there are different levels of skin where that pigment can be sitting. So I like to combine topicals like hydroquinone, which is a skin lightening agent. It is prescription. That works really well, often in combination with very gentle resurfacing lasers like a Clear and Brilliant. And sometimes I'll even put patients on oral tranexamic acid, which is an oral pill that also can help suppress pigment production. And that combined tends to work very well.
Oh, I love that. The next one, I mentioned this earlier, and this was really my mindset years ago, is if my skin is not tingling or burning, I don't think this product is working. So years ago, I was like, I'm not feeling it, so I'll add more. And then once my face starts burning, I was like, huh, I see the light at the end of the tunnel. How accurate is this?
Not accurate. It's a big skincare myth. And this idea of like no pain, no gain does not apply to skin. So there are plenty of products and ingredients out there that are amazing, they're effective, and they won't cause pain or discomfort. And that's kind of what you're looking for, is something that's not going to irritate your skin, but still deliver results. Usually that tingling and burning sensation that you're feeling, it means irritation and probably you're compromising your skin barrier at that point. The only exception I will say is maybe like a gentle exfoliant or at-home peel. Those can tingle a little bit, but they should never hurt. And if it's hurting, again, your active is too strong or you're using too much of it or too frequently.
Yeah, I guess with the skincare myth, specifically this one, I think it's that sense of immediate sensation. I think it's also when you use some of those face washes and after you wash your face, it's like so dry and like just a blank slate. And I'm like, yeah. Oh, I think I'm so clean. But actually, you're actually not.
You're just stripping your skin barrier.
Okay, next one. This is a really big thing. And even I have so many questions about this. NAD plus IV therapy. The last time I read NAD plus was, I guess, from my traumatized experience of studying for the MCAT, for the, I don't know, even if it's the Krebs cycle or oxidative phosphorylation. What is this for when it comes to IV therapy and skincare? And is it actually effective? Can we actually biohack our skin and, I guess, cellular aging in itself?
So this is very hot right now just because, you know, longevity and biohacking is becoming so popular. But like you said, with the Krebs cycle, NAD, it's a coenzyme. It plays an important role in a lot of different things in our bodies for energy metabolism, especially in the mitochondria, which I'm sure you learned is the powerhouse
of the cell.
It's also very helpful in DNA repair, cell signaling. So it basically facilitates a lot of these underlying processes that allow our cells to function. And as we age, our levels of NAD start to decline. And that decline is associated with a lot of the kind of age-related cell dysfunction that we see, like slowing of our metabolism, decreased muscle mass, endurance, buildup of DNA damage, even cognitive impairment and like poor circulation. Those are all kind of related. So the idea that if we were to replenish this NAD that we start to lose as we age, the idea is that we can maybe combat cellular aging and a lot of these kind of age-related changes. Now, when it comes to the data, I will say that we don't have enough data yet to really know whether or not that will work, at least with NAD IV therapy.
How do you know when something actually tastes good to an Asian person? When they say, it's not too sweet. And that's precisely what Wild Mannered set out to do. Founded by two childhood best friends who were tired of drinks that were too sweet, too artificial, and left them with worse hangovers, Wild Mannered is an Asian American founded brand focused on bridging people together with all-natural, shareable soju cocktails. With flavors like strawberry basil, cucumber lime mint, and pineapple ginger, every sip is made with the real fruits and botanicals and perfectly balanced at a lighter 13% ABV. Refreshing, smooth, and never too sweet. Get 10% off your first order with code FRANZ, that's F-R-A-N-Z, at drinkwildmannered.com or hit the store locator to find them in stores across New York City. Make your next get-together a little more wild-mannered. Tired of health fads and fleeting trends? Reprise Health takes wellness back to its roots, back to all natural remedies that have truly stood the test of time. Reprise is a holistic wellness brand bringing the ancient wisdom of traditional Eastern medicine into the modern world. Their daily gummies feature ancient Asian superfoods like ginseng, turmeric, and reishi mushrooms that are proudly sourced from KPC herbs, trusted by acupuncturists and herbalists for over 100 years. Whether to help you rest, focus, de-stress, or sleep, bring centuries of wisdom into your everyday health for 15% off at reprisehealth.com. That's R-E-P-R-I-S-E health.com with the code FRANZ. That's F-R-A-N-Z. One-time use and cannot be combined with other codes. Ancient wisdom, modern remedy.
When it comes to skin aging and its effects, we have different modalities now, right? I guess NAD plus IV therapy is one of them. And then we have this new things of like PDRN or exosomes and skin boosters. I guess along those lines of these different modalities, when it comes to combating skin aging, do you have a preference, or if you had to choose one modality?
Out of those that you just listed, the trendy ones or just in general?
I guess just in general.
I mean, your best bet is the things that are really truly backed by data and science. So sun protection is number one. Mm-hmm. We know for sure that the UV rays are going to speed up photo aging. Mm-hmm. So that's number one, that's going to break down your collagen. And then number two, again, retinoids. There's a mm-hmm. lot of decades of data to support that will help speed up cell turnover and help with collagen production. Those we know for sure will work. So those are kind of the ones that I stand by. All these new trends, again, we'll see. We just need more information. It's oftentimes when they're super hyped up like this, they're too good to be true. Again, the NAD is the exception where it's very promising, I will say, because it makes sense. But whether or not we can actually get the IV NAD into our cells and function the way that we want it to, we need more studies.
Got it. When it comes to skin aging and I guess the effects of it like sagging, let's roll back into a more conservative way aside from just intravenous therapy. And I've been seeing a lot of gua sha and facial rollers everywhere. I think a few years ago, I was using that vibrating like a solar wave with the light.
Don't get me started on that one.
What is the premise behind all of these facial rollers and how effective are they actually?
So I don't have anything against gua sha and facial rollers. My issue is more so that their benefits are often over-promised, where people, influencers on social media are saying that this is the reason why they have been able to put off a facelift, you know? Mm-hmm. That's not true. The benefits are that they can be helpful for lymphatic drainage and de-puffing your face by helping that fluid move out of the face. So it can help kind of temporarily kind of sculpt and contour your face, but it's not going to give you a facelift or change your bone structure. So you have to set expectations in terms of what it can actually do. And again, I think it's great, especially in the mornings when you're a little puffy, but it's a temporary fix.
I see. Well, if someone doesn't want to get a facelift now, I guess when it comes to facial sculpting and contouring in itself, what are the proven modalities that we have? And I guess that you do in your office as well.
Yeah. So it depends on the person. There are a bunch of different things that come into play when it comes to aging and why everything kind of shifts down from the loss of collagen and elastin in our skin. That's why your skin starts to get that laxity, but also our fat pads start to shift down, bone gets resorbed. All these changes will cause everything just to kind of like shift down and forward and sag and jowls and all that, the turkey neck. All those things are caused by all those different factors. And we can do a lot of different things in our office to correct this, anywhere from fillers to replace that lost volume. You can get fat transfer, skin tightening. We can use devices like Ultherapy, which is one of my favorites, to stimulate collagen and tighten the lower face. And then, of course, there's always surgery where you can actually literally reposition the tissue if you need.
The next question I wanted to ask is closely related to an old best friend of mine, which is acne. And I've definitely done this one before. Toothpaste. I don't know where this started. I don't know if people are actually still doing this. toothpaste as acne gel. Where did this come from? Is it actually effective?
You're right. I think this is a very old school home remedy that's still kind of floating around. I don't know where it came from, but I think the reason people do it is because toothpaste feels very drying. And I think that when you put it on a pimple, it can make it seem like that pimple is shrinking down because you're just drying it out so much. But it's very harsh on the skin. We have different things now that you can use. I like sulfur as a spot treatment instead. But toothpaste contains ingredients like fluoride, sometimes even like baking soda and hydrogen peroxide. So that can be very irritating and harsh on the skin. I mean, it's literally made for hard enamel on your teeth, not for skin. So I wouldn't recommend it. I think that's why people have used it in the past, to kind of dry out their pimples.
I see. Well, aside from a spot treatment, I guess for someone who's actually struggling with acne, what are some of your first step recommendations?
Yes. I mean, acne is very frustrating, and I know that it can really impact your, you know, self-esteem and your day-to-day life. So it's something that we see in clinic every day. If you're someone who's starting out, not ready to see a dermatologist and just kind of want to make a skincare routine, I would say pick one or two products. Don't go too crazy with every single acne product. Just one or two, like a cleanser, like a benzoyl peroxide or maybe a salicylic acid cleanser if you tend to get just like blackheads. And then adapalene. Those are kind of two things you can use. Adapalene, which is a retinoid. It's over the counter now. It used to be prescription only. Ease into that. Use that maybe 2 to 3 times a week at night. And then the key is to just be consistent and patient, because acne takes, you know, it takes a good 2 to 3 months for everything to kick in. You don't want to give up yet. Give that a good go. And then if you don't feel like your acne is really budging, then maybe it's time to go see a dermatologist for some prescriptions.
Yeah, definitely. I think that was my mistake before too, I guess when I was in high school. I guess all of that mental thing of this product is not working. I've been using it for 2 weeks. What's going on? On to the next one and on to the next one. Well, you know, we can't leave the topic of dermatology without talking about one of the most important part, which is hair. And hair loss is such crucial topic because it's really a source of self-confidence, right, for many. And I guess there's many reasons why many people have hair loss, right? And I think it's something that you want to just like cure right away or find an answer to right away. And I guess that's why people have stumbled upon rosemary oil for hair loss. Is there actually data regarding the efficacy or even like the proven usage of rosemary oil for hair loss?
Yeah, so this is something that's been floating around quite a bit, and even some derms are talking about it and recommending it. But if you look at the actual study, which is there's one study that actually studies this and compares it to minoxidil, it's a study that's problematic in many different ways. It's actually a very poorly conducted study. It's a small study, and it compares it to 2% minoxidil, which really no one is using. 5% minoxidil is what I actually recommend. So it's comparing the efficacy to something that we don't really use to treat hair loss. And the results were that they were comparable. And the way that they looked at it was just kind of subjectively. It wasn't blinded. It wasn't controlled well. So I wouldn't go off of that study to really recommend rosemary oil. We have other things that work a lot better for hair loss that I would recommend, minoxidil being one of them.
Mm-hmm. Are there in-office treatments that you would recommend for hair loss?
Yeah. I mean, there's prescription medications, depending on if you're male or female. We could do PRP injections. There are some lasers that can help stimulate hair growth as well. We don't have any of those in our office, but I do PRP and I write a lot of prescriptions. So for women, if it's hormonal hair loss, spironolactone can be helpful. For men, finasteride.
You know, we've talked so much about skincare trends and things that maybe sometimes frustrates dermatologists when they see it online. Sometimes when I see a video, I'm like, I wonder how dermatologists feel when watching this video. And many times it can get overwhelming, right? Beyond just the trends in itself, just a new product launch every single week, a new study that says this or that. I guess if someone feels overwhelmed by all the skincare and beauty trends from NAD, IV therapy, to facial rollers, to hair serums, to eating your retinol, I guess what's the one starting point you'd recommend so that they can feel confident in their skin and skincare without feeling all of, I guess, the apprehension from all of these fads and trends?
Well, if you're in New York, you can come see me. Don't walk. Yeah. No, but jokes aside, social media, I think, has completely changed how we consume information. We have access to so much information now, which is amazing, but also it's opened up a lot of room for misinformation, which unfortunately sometimes spreads much faster than the accurate information. So my advice is whenever there's a new trend or some sort of hyped up product, just do a little bit of research and go to some trusted resources or even your dermatology, you know, social media influencers. They tend to debunk a lot of these myths, but you want to do a little bit of research and just see if there's any data to actually support what it is that you're curious about. But I know it can be overwhelming and it can be confusing, and that's fine. So if you really are lost, my recommendation is to go see a dermatologist because it's literally our job to help guide you.
I love that so much. Dr. Yang, thank you so much for your time and giving us your expertise and debunking these myths and letting us know to not put that damn lemon in our face. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. This is fun.